Hey everybody, this is B. Jemine, aka The Terrible Australian, and welcome to the 127th episode of Super Podcast. I hope you're all doing really well today. Unfortunately, my regular co-host, Super Marcy, isn't here to join us today, but due to health reasons, but we both, all of us here on the show today, wish Marcy the best, and hopefully when she's up to it, she'll return to the show very soon. And funnily enough, my other co-host, Nick Bodsworth, isn't able to join us today because he's out and about gallivanting at San Diego for Comic-Con this week, so he's got a lot on his plate over the next few days. So, but hopefully when he comes back, he'll join us for our next couple episodes. So, but until then, I have somebody with me today who is joining me as my special co-host for today. And that, of course, is the one, the only Miss B Harper. How are you going, B?
Hello, Bede. And hello, everybody. And hello to our special guest for today.
Indeed. I'll introduce our special guest so everyone can know who it is. Our special guest for today is somebody who hasn't been on the show for quite a while, and I think it's probably been a few years since he's last been on, or probably 2 years or so, but he's back here today to give us more of his mad movie man madness, and that, of course, is the one and only Mr. AJ. How you going, AJ?
I'm doing pretty good. As a great philosopher once said, my name's Mike D, and I'm back from the dead.
Woohoo!
That's right, now it's a party.
Yeah, hell yeah. And it actually has been a while, AJ, since you last been on, because I'm trying to remember the last episode you were on was the documentaries episode that you did with Marcy, like back in 2013.
Okay, so that was, I remember doing the Home Alone commentary. That was winter of 2012. We did the documentaries after that?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I recall it around then. I mean, I listened to the episode like a couple of weeks ago, so I think it might have been, yeah, in 2013 from what I gather.
Okay, I don't doubt that because I'm old and I forget things, but I just, yeah, I guess it has been a while.
Yeah, although I think I beat you on the old scale. I mean, what's your name again? Sorry, I've completely forgot who you were.
My name is Nicolas Cage.
Mom, Nicolas Cage. And I'm also Morgan Freeman. But, you know, that's a whole different episode right there. But we're all here today, everyone, because we have a jam-packed show to talk about today. For this episode, we are going to be talking about the Terminator franchise, especially with the fifth film in the series, Terminator Genisys, which has been released probably for the last week or so, I believe, from what I remember. So we'll be doing a in-depth review of that, but before we do that, we're going to be talking about, of course, the first four. I fucked it up already. and I was already on a roll too. But we're going to be talking about the first four films before we do that, and if we have time, we might also talk about some films and TV shows that we've been watching lately. But until then, before we get into the episode, does anyone have an important question they want to ask me?
Bede, darling.
Yes.
In the Terra Australis.
Of course. I'm just going to let you keep saying my name over and over again. It's going to be like Daenerys on Game of Thrones, where she just, her name just keeps going on and on and on with all the titles. So continue.
Terra Australis.
Yes.
Australis.
Yes.
Terra Australis.
Yes. I like all the accents that you're doing, Bea. It's pretty awesome.
Thank you. So why have you been so terrible, Bede?
Alrighty. I'm a terrible Australian. Because I have seen Mordecai. This movie was rough. and that would be the understatement of the century. Now, I'm just going to put it out there. I know a lot over the last few years, Johnny Johnny Depp has been getting a lot of flack from people saying, oh, he only makes crap movies now and give crap performances and whatnot. I don't necessarily agree with that. I feel like, yeah, there have been some movies that that weren't good, but I think in the last 5 years there have been, you know, the some that have actually been pretty solid, and you know, and him giving also really good performances in there. But after watching this movie, I was almost converted to the point. It's like, yeah, this is probably the worst thing that Johnny Depp has ever done. Even worse than The Astronaut's Wife from 15 years ago, which is saying a lot. Yeah, I was completely and utterly speechless by the awfulness of this film. And I know a certain person here has seen it as well, and I would like to hear his thoughts on the film as well.
Well, you know, went back before, right around when Mordecai was coming out, you know, I follow a lot of movie people on Twitter, and there was just a shit ton of cynicism and, like, really mean, like, joke-making about this movie. Like, who hadn't even seen it? It was just, oh, why does this movie even exist? Johnny Depp's going down the toilet, which, oh my god, 10 years ago he was the biggest movie star on the planet, and now he's just, like, he's just been betrayed just so much. The switch is just really drastic. But I stood up for Mordecai right away. It's like, you jerks, like, just see the movie first before you make any judgments. Just at least do that. And having seen the movie, oof, yeah, it is not good, but I can see the seeds of the movie that it could have been. Like, if you put this out in, like, the 60s, had made it like an Ealing comedy from England, put like Peter Sellers and some old like old school comedy talents in there, and roughly, you know, like the similar script, and it would have been fine. But everything is just so oppressively wacky. Like, it's really aggressive in how it just shoves everything that's like, hey, we're acting really, really kooky in your face. And you're just like, and when like stuff like the running subplot with Paul Bettany being like a nigh indestructible henchman who just has this unwavering loyalty to Johnny Depp's character. Like, you can kind of see, like, okay, I know I'm supposed to laugh, but it's just not happening. And it's just so, like, it just became too much to handle. And at almost 2 hours, it just got really annoying. This movie had a lot of potential and a fantastic cast to go along with it, but. Yeah. Yeah, like, it was just not realized very well at all.
It almost seemed like they were trying to go for sort of a Coen Brothers kind of vibe with the film. Yeah. Like, it has that sort of, you know, kind of that slapsticky kind of screwball kind of vibe. But also you have this sort of, like, sort of darker elements, like the violence and stuff and all, like that, which kind of feels out of tone with the rest of the film. So, yeah.
This movie. Yeah, and I had wanted to stick up for it before, because it was directed, not written by, I was kind of surprised about this, it was directed by David Koepp, who did a lot of, you know, very underrated movies. Stir of Echoes, one of the coolest, like, supernatural movies of the 90s, and he did The Trigger Effect with Kyle MacLachlan, that was really interesting, and Premium Rush, which was just a really good, fun, bike messenger-based action movie.
Yep.
But, yeah, this one just it was such a dud. Like, it's far from the worst movie ever, but yeah, it was just not good.
It probably isn't the worst movie ever, but it's probably my pick as the worst film I've seen so far. But then again, I still haven't seen that many terrible films so far this year, but at the moment it's still pretty high up on the list. So I definitely would say not recommended. So I think, B, you don't need to be in a rush to go watch this movie right away.
Yeah.
Oh, trust me, I'm not.
All right. But anyways, we'll get right to our main topic, which, of course, we'll be talking about probably one of, in my opinion, one of the greatest action franchises of all time. And that, of course, is the Terminator franchise. Now,
done.
I was waiting for someone to cue that the theme music.
Yeah,
See, that,
why I went with the sad trombone, I don't know.
I don't know. But it's awesome, though, nonetheless. But to give a context for our viewers, our listeners out there who have never heard of the Terminator franchise, and if you haven't, what the hell is wrong with you? Of course, the first Terminator film was co-written and directed by James Cameron, and it came out in 1984, which is a pretty good year to release this movie because that was the year I was born, so it makes total sense. But also, it tells the story of Kyle Reese, who is a soldier from the future, who was sent back in time to protect Sarah Connor from a cyborg called a Terminator. And the reason why for that is that Sarah Connor will someday be the mother of John Connor, who is the human resistance leader in the future that will fight back against against the machines, and also as sort of a computer program that became AI that sort of became self-aware, Skynet, which pretty much destroyed the entire planet. So that's pretty much the basis of the first film. And B, tell us your thoughts on The Terminator.
Brilliant. Classic. Absolutely essential. That's pretty much how I believe the first Terminator film is. I didn't actually see it until I was about 14 years old. Ooh. So I was old enough to, you know, not be that scared, quite frankly. But it still left a hell of an impression on me, primarily because of Arnold Schwarzenegger playing the Terminator. It wasn't just the fact that he was a big man, but the Terminator is an assassin. He is, as Kyle Reese says, he can't be bargained with, he can't be reasoned with, he doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear. Oh, that's like the biggest thing about this movie in terms of its villain. Like, it is so frightening. This film could have easily have been a crime stalker type movie, but instead of just having a cyborg, you could just have a regular human being. But another thing that really does elevate the Terminator from, you know, what could have potentially been a B movie sort of thing, and don't get me wrong, the Terminator at heart is a B movie, but what really elevates it is the talent behind it. And with that talent comes, you know, thought and creativity and ingenuity. This film was made before CGI became all the rage. Hell, before it was even, like, really discovered. So you had a bunch of people working on this movie and believing in the project. And what you see is a reflection of their passions. You know, every single day that they put in, every single tear they shed, you know, that's it right there. And I just love it when a film is made at a particular time by a bunch of particular people to make this particular result.
Awesome. AJ, tell us your thoughts on The Terminator.
Well, B said it pretty good. Like, all those adjectives are ones that I would use to describe this one. Looking back, it's kind of weird that the one that started it all for this series is kind of the odd man out, because from Terminator 2 onward, they're all, like, firmly popcorn movies. Somewhat to a lesser extent, Salvation, which kind of has a case of the grimdarks, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But the series as a whole is like machines exploding and big stunts and like wide open spaces and all this stuff. And the first Terminator is very personal. The ensemble's not that big for just our main characters. The mood is more akin to like a film noir or a horror movie with sci-fi elements. Like, it's very dark and very gritty, like in the good way, instead of like all these kind of lighthearted properties trying to be like more adult for the kids by just pretending to be really serious when they're not. But again, that's another day. But yeah, the atmosphere of this movie is just palpable. Like, you just feel the oppression, like you feel the claustrophobia, and the fact that, you know, like B said, the Terminator is coming at you and it just does not stop, and there's nothing you can do to sway it. Like, it gives it that frightening edge, and it ends, and despite, you know, kind of the somewhat heroic ending, it's like, yeah, Sarah Connor lives and the Terminator is destroyed, it still has that somber ending. Like, you see the picture being taken and her kind of heading in towards the future, realizing, and you as an audience member realize, like, oh, the time it she didn't really delay anything. She didn't really save anything. Like, humanity is still gonna be destroyed at some point. So it has that very, very bittersweet ending, and it's really unique. And yeah, for the as much of a budget as they were working with at the time, the movie looks phenomenal. They worked great with the resources they had. Yeah, Terminator, absolute classic.
Awesome. I definitely have to agree. I can't remember exactly the first time I saw Terminator. I remember seeing it when I was younger, probably when I was a kid. But I recently rewatched the entire series again over the last few days in preparation for the fifth film, and I was pretty stunned on how well the Terminator still holds up. Like, it is such a brilliantly well put together film from both a writing, directing standpoint, and also the performances from everybody are fantastic. And of course, you know, watching this film, you know for a fact that this was the perfect role for Arnold. Like, it, like, at the time, like, he was still being, you know, kind of still coming out of that sort of area of being, a muscle man and all that, and people weren't taking him seriously as an actor. But this was kind of like the perfect role for him, because he in the first film is absolutely terrifying as the villain. Like, he's just an unstoppable force of nature that I think, as Kyle Reese says in the movie, he cannot be swayed. He's not remorseful, and he will not stop until you are dead. And it's just fantastic. And also, like, I don't know if either of you two have bought the recent remastered Blu-ray of the film that came out probably 2 years ago. If you have, the Blu-ray is probably one of the best looking HD transfers I have ever seen for an older film. It just looks stunning. My jaw was pretty much dropped to the ground the entire time. But, you know, but that's the master of James Cameron. And you can imagine watching this film back in 1984. Seeing what James Cameron did with this film, you would know for a fact that, you know, this guy is going to go on to do great things. And as we have seen since the release of this film, that certainly became true. And unfortunately, this wasn't his directorial debut. His first film was Piranha 2, The Spawning, but, you know, we can forgive him for that. But to be fair, he was actually kicked off 2 weeks after when that movie was shoot. For his first fully controlled film, it's just the perfect film, you know, just to get him noticed. And of course, you know, and it shows how amazing this film is, because in 2008, this film was selected by the American Library of Congress for the National Film Registry for culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant, I believe. So that kind of says something when a film like this, which I agree with you both, at the heart of it is a B movie, but it's the filmmaking and the performances that sort of elevate it to be much more than that.
Yeah, you watch The Terminator and think, this guy's gonna make a shitload of Titanic documentary someday.
Hells yeah. and of course, I got to say this though. Imagine how this movie would have been different if O.J. Simpson ended up playing the Terminator. the irony!
The fact that James Cameron said the reason he didn't pick O.J. Simpson was that he seemed like too much of a nice guy.
Holy shit!
Irony once again.
About that, Jimmy.
And also, I was just looking on here. Apparently, Sting was also in talks to play Kyle Reese in the movie as well.
Mm-hmm. See, well, I can see that. I can definitely see that.
And Roseanne Arquette, I believe, also auditioned for the role of Sarah Connor as well.
Great thing I find about this movie is that it doesn't confine itself to one genre.
Oh, yeah.
It's been quite a few of them. And, like, you have the obvious ones like science fiction, horror, and action. But then you have film noir, as you said, Bede. And also, at a heart, like, Cameron has said that all of his films are love stories. Yeah. And this is perhaps the best way to, I really don't mean to generalize here, but in terms of the general demographic, This is perhaps one of the best methods to get a guy to see a romance movie.
Mm.
You draw him in with the action and all those wonderful elements, and then you have this very intimate and very close story between a man and a woman. You know, it's beautiful. It really is.
Or a cyborg and his guns. Just saying.
if that's what floats your boat.
Of course. I think we all agree The Terminator is a masterpiece and one of the best films ever. However, many years later in 1991, James Cameron decided to make a sequel. Well, actually, he was going to make a sequel sometime after the first one, but due to sort of rights issues and whatnot, he wasn't able to do it. And of course, he went on to make Aliens and as well as The Abyss. So when all those things were sorted out, he decided to make a sequel to Terminator entitled Terminator 2 Judgment Day. And now for the plot for this one is Skynet decides to, after the failure of not killing Sarah Connor, Skynet decides to send another Terminator back in time, but this time to kill John Connor when he was still a kid. However, in the future, John Connor also sends a Terminator back, the same one, the T-800, but luckily, this also played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, but luckily this time, he is a good guy. So they go back, so they both get sent back in time, one to destroy John Connor and one to protect him. And of course, also Sarah Connor gets involved and as well has to save his son from being killed. So I probably have fucked that up big time, just trying to try to say the synopsis of this film. Now, B, what did you think of the first time you saw Terminator 2 Judgment Day?
Good morning, Dr. Silverman. How's the knee? shit. What can you say about Terminator 2 that hasn't already been said, in all honesty? I mean, well, the first one is very sort of self-contained and very self-contained and very intimate. But Terminator 2 Judgment Day, it is big, it is loud, and it just turns everything up to 11 in every single regard. And rather than try to be, you know, try to actively make itself better than T1, it's, to me, I can't really compare the two because they're both very different movies. So I feel Terminator 2 Judgment Day is it is a super enormous, very bombastic, violent movie about peace, but at the same time, it concentrates on the human elements of the story. And let's face it, even if you had the best action in the world in this movie, with all the wonderful technology and all the fantastic stuff they have at their disposal, if you didn't have the main characters as they are in this movie, it wouldn't have been as memorable. And yeah, I've really got to give huge props to Linda Hamilton. So many people were asking her about her physique in this movie. And look, her physique is impressive, but this is the film that really sort of re-revolutionized how, you know, women in action films are to be portrayed. It started with Sigourney Weaver in Alien. And Linda Hamilton sort of, you know, made this a more natural and darker progression of a woman who has been through some sort of significant trauma. What I also liked was that Linda Hamilton herself suggested to Cameron that she would agree to come back to do this, the second movie, but she wanted Sarah to be in a mental institution with everything she knew, everything that, you know, Kyle told her about and everything she started to do research on. Like, she would not be the innocent naivety, you know, innocent naive individual that she was in the first movie. You know, she would dramatically change, and that's what Terminator 2 is all about. It's about changing who you are in order to, you know, help the future become a better one. You have the big explosions and everything and all the wonderful gunfights, but that's all beside the point. This is still very much a film about the characters. It just has more pretty things to look at.
Definitely. AJ, what did you think of Terminator 2 Judgment Day?
Absolutely love Terminator 2. And Just a like a little aside, Terminator 2 and the first Terminator, I saw these for the first time probably in like late middle school, early high school. But Terminator 2 was one of the first movies that when I was a kid, that I was kind of aware of like the event proportion of it. Like it was a big deal here, and just extending to like the product placements, like or product tie-ins, because I can remember like going to the local skating rink and there was like the legendary T2 arcade game that I would never get quarters for because it was too expensive and my parents didn't want to spend money on me like that. And I remember I know, pity me.
I'm sending you quarters right now so you can play.
Bless you, Saint Bede. And I remember like going to the convenience store and there being like a giant T2 themed Jawbreaker. We just had like everything was Terminator 2. And it's kind of weird that like a hard R-rated movie was marketed for kids. Because there was like I remember there was this one toy. It was like a bioflesh generator. It was basically just Play-Doh shaped like Arnold. You did it over like this plastic guy. And then I saw like a little bit of the movie when it was on TV. And it's like, oh, there's that Terminator movie I saw. And all of a sudden the T-1000 as John Connor's foster mother like spears the father through the head with a spike. It's like, oh, I'm not going to watch this anymore. Like this wasn't the friendly cartoon thing that I'd been kind of led to believe. But yeah, that was one of the first instances where I'm like, okay, this movie is like something that's really big and really huge. And then when I finally saw it, yeah, like everything Bede said, like it is impressive on a technical scale, you know, just like James Cameron did with the first movie, pushing what he could do with special effects. He did the exact same thing here with the liquid metal look for the T-1000. But then he had a lot of he still had a lot of stop motion, like animation bits and practical effects. And it is impressive on a big scale, too. But the little moments, like the character moments, really do make it. Like when John Connor and the Terminator come to rescue Sarah from the mental institution, and she sees Schwarzenegger round the corner in slow motion, and she just screams, like, because she doesn't know yet that he's a good guy, but for this, it's like, my world is just about gone, and you just feel her anguish. And then by the end of the movie, which is like an almost relentless structure to it, it's like a big chase movie with not a whole lot of downtime, when you realize that the Terminator is like about to sacrifice himself to be like, okay, just to make sure there will be no remnants left for Skynet to start over, you realize that, oh, wow, like, I'm feeling really sorry for this character. And you think the whole time, it's like, oh, Schwarzenegger's just shooting guns and just being cool. But it makes you look back and realize how much he meant to Sarah, how much he meant to John. It's like when Sarah says, like, all the father figures in John's life have like been fleeting, or they've abandoned and gone away in some way, but this Terminator is the closest thing he's had to something stable and consistent in his life. And you just kind of look back and go, wow, this wasn't just a big explosion fest. There was a lot of character stuff in here. The drama works, the special effects work, the action works, just everything works about this movie, and it's just about damn near perfect.
Yep. I also got to say, I totally did not cry when the Terminator went to lower himself into the molten lead.
You did.
I didn't. I didn't. I swear to God, I did not cry.
I didn't bawl when he had his thumbs up as he was getting covered by lava. Well, no, not at all.
I'm not crying. I just had something in both my eyes.
God damn, onion ninjas.
I was cutting an onion before. Why am I cutting an onion while watching Terminator? I'm not sure. But, yeah, I have to agree with the both of you. Terminator 2, like the first film, is a masterpiece. I think a good way to compare these films is, like, the first two Alien films. Like, if Terminator is Alien, then Terminator 2 is Aliens. In that, it is a much bigger film. There's bigger action, lots of special effects, both CGI and practical. But, of course, it is sort of the character work of this film that makes the film what it is. And particularly in the director's cut, which I think is kind of my preferred version because there's a lot more sort of character stuff in that one. Particularly, of course, you know, Michael Biehn has a quick cameo in that cut as well. So, you know, which adds a lot more to the film. And of course, to me, it really is the sort of the core relationship between John Connor and the Terminator that makes it work. And like you say, AJ, it's sort of that sort of father and son dynamic, and John trying to sort of teach the Terminator how to be more human. And when it sort of gets to that ending, that sort of really hits you because, like, and it's sort of mentioned in the third film, which we'll be talking about. It's like John Connor says in the third film, it's like, you're basically like the only father I ever knew, pretty much. The film just is just brilliant. Like, and of course, it has one of the greatest villains ever with the T-1000, with Robert Patrick just brilliantly playing that role and just to perfection. And of course, Linda Hamilton, just fantastic as well. It's just a really great movie, and again, one of the best ever made, and one of the greatest sequels ever as well. I keep going back and forth which one of the two is my preferred, but I might have to give the edge to the two because it still has all the great things that made the first Terminator film fantastic. But at the same time, it goes further with it as well, with both its themes and sort of relationships with his characters and action, and and it's definitely just an awesome, 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 awesome film.
I'm
in
the same boat.
Sorry,
go ahead. Sorry, who's speaking? AJ, you go first.
Okay, I was just going to say, I'm in the same boat as to, you know, trying to decide, like, which one's better. It's kind of like Frankenstein versus Bride of Frankenstein. Like, there's a lot of great stuff about him, and Bride of Frankenstein just brought so many, like, kooky new elements to the formula. In this case, I almost do kind of have to side with the first one, just as I, like, prefer the original Frankenstein to the Bride, just because I tend to kind of go for the more, like, the ones that started it, the basic ones, but that's by no means to indicate that T2 is a slouch. They're both amazing movies.
Yeah, you do. No, just kidding. and you, B, what were you saying before?
I was going to say, well, rather two notes. You know how you have this movement of, I don't know, hipsters or whatever they call themselves, saying that the second Terminator is nothing on the first Terminator, like, because, you know, Hayden, the second one's cool now or something. Yeah. That's bullshit. Secondly, okay, the nuclear war nightmare, how did that affect you when you saw it?
Oh, I remember being, as a kid, I think I might have been about, when did this movie come out? 1991. I might have been about maybe 7 or 8 when it came out, and I do remember watching it, like, only briefly as a kid, but I pretty much ran out screaming after that scene happened. I was terrified of that scene. And I was actually kind of paranoid, like, oh, the world's going to end for, like, a while after that.
Yeah, this apparently the folks who make those types of weapons wrote to James Cameron to say, thank you for accurately depicting what would happen in a nuclear blast. Oh,
I saw that scene a couple weeks ago, and it's like, oh, well, my drawers are sufficiently filled.
Yeah, far out, man, far out. Jesus.
Oh, those kids were only playing. And of course, like, we haven't mentioned this, and I forgot to mention two things before we move on to the next film. Two of the main sort of behind-the-scenes people of the film that I think brought a lot to the film, of course, is Brad Fiedel with his, you know, amazing Terminator score, which it's brilliant in the first film because it's sort of much more synth in style, but I sort of love the sort of the grander, more epic sort of sound that he brought to it with the second film. I mean, it's just classic music, and every time you hear it, it just makes you amped up and go whoo and stuff like that. But and of course this cinematographer Adam Greenberg, who of course shot the first film and as well as shot the second film, and both films just look spectacular, and he even got an Oscar nomination for best cinematography for his work on the second film. And so that's pretty much it. I just want to give a bit of kudos for them as well.
And Stan Winston
with his animatronic creations for the Terminators, because they're just amazing. But we'll talk more about Stan in a second, because we'll move right along to our third film in the series, which of course is the 2003 film Terminator 3: Rise of the Machines, which they, even though James Cameron says he's pretty much has told his story with the first two films, but of course, you know, being Hollywood, we needed another sequel, and so James Cameron decided not to come back for this one, but instead Jonathan Mostrow, who at that point only made a few films like Breakdown and U571, was chosen to direct this film. And of course, Arnold is back. And the plot for this one is that it follows a couple of years after the events of the second film, where John Connor is sort of like living off the grid and he's pretty much going from town to town trying to make sure that nobody knows who he is. And then Skynet, of course, sends another Terminator back in time to not only kill him, but also to kill people who work for him in the Resistance in the future. And of course, the Terminator, or the Terminatrix, as they call her in the film, is played by Chrisanna Loken. And of course, during the course of the film, we are introduced to the character of Kate Brewster, played by Claire Danes, who just, as we discover her in the film, spoilers for all those who have never seen Terminator 3, she is actually the wife of John Connor in the future. Now, I remember when this film came out, it did pretty well at the box office, not as big as the second film, but I remember at the same time it did get actually pretty good reviews from everybody, and so it's like it's not as good as the first two, but, you know, as a sequel on its own, it's pretty solid. But it's only in the last few couple of years that I've been starting to see a bit of a tide turn against it by a lot of people saying, oh, it's terrible, it's awful, and stuff like that. Now, I'm going to ask B, what do you think that it is an awful, terrible film, or is it just, you know, perfectly fine on its own?
Oh, it is absolutely not a terrible film. If it was really that terrible, how come it earns so much money? For one thing.
I mean, I'm not making fun of it, but, you know, there have been bad movies in the past that have made lots of money, but, you know, that's a whole...
Well, the fact of the matter is this. Like, you have this franchise that everybody is familiar with, and by this point, if I'm not mistaken, Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection had come out. Now, those were basically... I'm not going to go too far in depth here, but especially the fourth one, Alien Resurrection, it really didn't do a lot for its franchise. And as a franchise goes on, like, you're going to have to think up some brand new things.
Yeah.
And I feel that the major criticism made against, you know, T3 is that it is, for like two parts of the movie, it is essentially the same film as T2 once you think about it. Mm. And there are, of course, differing elements and whatnot, but it's not until the final act that T3 really does show its own sort of true colours. It actually has its own sort of thing going. And I'm referring to when John, Kate, and the Terminator, you know, breached the Skynet base. And it's on basically on the day that Judgment Day is going to happen. And, you know, there's this enormous fight between, you know, the Terminators, you know, T-101 and TX and everything like that. And rather than the film ending on a victorious note, like the heroes prevailing, they fail. And when you see that, and when you think, oh my God, they actually failed in their mission, you know, that they did not prevent Judgment Day from happening. You know what? That's actually a really great way to end T3. Because by this point, if everybody was pretty much getting sick of the whole sort of, you know, going back through time to protect so-and-so and whatnot. So finally, in a sense, T3 progressed the plot of the Terminator films. It actually gave it a new sort of way to go. But generally speaking, I didn't find T3 to be awful at all. In saying that, it does have its flaws, and let's face it, it is not high caliber like T2 is.
Talk through the hard.
And, well, look, that part even really wasn't that bad, yeah. Because, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger by this point was getting old in his years,
yeah.
And I feel it is better to admit to yourself rather than deny it. And in this case, like, this is Arnold actually having fun with the role. He's kind of letting himself go. He's having a good time with it. And everybody in this movie is actually having a good time. And I think it's better to see the actors, you know, enjoying themselves in a movie rather than obviously, you know, displaying, oh, I really don't want to be here. Everybody in this film is being such a good sport. And it does, you know, earn to a more sort of lighter approach. But Just the same, I don't see how so many people can say that this is a terrible movie and whatnot, because if you think this is a terrible movie, you obviously haven't seen a lot of terrible movies. And quite frankly, the action in this film is pretty darn good. So nobody was a slouch. Nobody was a slouch during this movie. No, it's not as high quality, but if you're willing to just accept it on its own sort of merits and just try to realize that not every film is going to be directed by James Cameron, it really isn't that bad. It's more than serviceable, and I find it is wonderfully entertaining nonetheless.
Cool. AJ, what do you think of Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines?
Again, I gotta agree with Bede. You know, back in the day I saw this, and I remember this being kind of a big deal for me because it was the first, like, advanced show that I had seen, because it came out, I think, like, 8 or 9 o'clock the day before it officially opened. I was like, oh boy, this is the first time for that, oh wow. And so I went there, and I just had a complete and total blast. And for years I have been defending this movie, like, to the death. It's like, this movie is friggin' awesome, what are you talking about? It's not awful. And then I rewatched it today, and my enthusiasm kind of has dampened just a little bit. It is, like B said, a lot of it is, feel like, a T2 retread, you know. Like, the main goal of the Terminator, like, isn't to stop Judgment Day. Like, they have to, like, just get to cover, basically. That's what his mission is. And the assault at the end when the Skynet's coming online in the lab, it has a lot of the similar beats and stuff as to the Cyberdyne shootout from Terminator 2. But like B said, like, it's still a very well-made action-packed movie. Like, the stunt work was amazing. The crane chase alone, like, I know we're gonna get to Genesis in a few minutes, but I will, like, say right now, the crane chase is better than just any of the action sequences in Genesis, hands down. You have that, and you have Terminator and John Connor and Kate getting the weapons cache from Sarah's coffin, and you have the shootout with the police there, and then the brawl in the climax between the TX and the Terminator just in the bathroom, just slamming each other down, just doing these big wrestling moves. Like there's a lot of standout sequences in here, and it's just a lot of fun, and it's really well executed. As far as the villain of this piece goes, that's where kind of some of my reservations popped up, because you can just see, like, some cigar chomping executive, like, hey, we need, like, the T-1000 guy, just make him a chick this time. And they have a lot of unnecessary, like, additions to the character, like, when she tastes blood to, like, try and, like, scan genetics and everything, and so, like, when she wipes up some of John Connor's blood and, like, licks it sexily off her finger in her mouth, she just has, like, a orgasmic reaction to it. That's like, what is happening here? But it didn't bother me too much. Christina Loken, you know, had, like, the steely gaze down. She had the physique down. She could handle herself well in the fighting sequences, even when she, like, wasn't, like, being enhanced by CG or anything. Although the CG definitely helped. I completely forgot all, like, in the brawl, when, like, she has, like, she's basically wrapped around Schwarzenegger and, like, just twists her arms around and her head around. It's like, oh, gee, ew, ah. And it's just a whole lot of fun. It doesn't have the amount of heart that the first one did. And you can tell it's definitely trying to get there. There are some kind of callback scenes, and it doesn't quite work. But as B said, like, its most distinctive feature, like, is its ending, which, kind of on a side note, I think this is, like, the one time that, like, we've had a young John Connor and an old John Connor in a movie, and they're both played by the same guy.
I know, that's weird.
because in the introductory scene, it's, like, set in the future, and it's, like, he's leading him to victory, and it's, like, that's Nick Stahl in old age makeup. It's not, like, Captain What's-His-Nuts from Terminator 2, just, like, Scarface guy. So that's pretty interesting. But yeah, the heroes fail, and, like, the movie ends with him, like, assuming command, assuming responsibility. It's like, okay, Judgment Day's here. Now what? Roll credits. And that was such a ballsy move. So Terminator 3 is definitely flawed, but it's a lot better than people give it credit for.
I have to agree with both of you. I think it does have its flaws, and some of the humor can be a little cheesy, but we got to remember that most of the humor, it's not like, you know, Batman and Robin style, where, you know, silly humor and all that. It's more like a lot of the humor really does come from Arnold, and basically the Terminator trying to act human, and basically and just doing it wrong. Like, yeah, some of the things, like, you know, the talk to the hand bit and stuff like that. It's a bit silly, but, you know, at the same time, I mean, it's no sillier than any of the humor in the second film. Let's just put it out there. But I do agree, like, it is not on the level of the first two films, but I think as a sequel on its own terms, I think it is really entertaining and it's really solid. And I do like Nick Stahl and Claire Danes. I thought they did really well with
Yeah.
their
Yeah, they
performances.
did.
And of course, like, and Christina Loken, she's sort of a mixed bag. At times she's really good, and other times it's like, what the hell are you doing? You're really bizarre right now. But of course, great action sequence. I mean, the crane sequence was amazing. And also, to me, what gives my respect to this film is the ending. Like, I think without a doubt, this is my favorite ending of all the series. It's just like, it was completely, when I saw the film the first time, I was completely kind of like blown away by the ending, mainly because, like, I didn't expect it to end like that at all, especially like a big major blockbuster like this one. And at the time, I believe it still is. I think it still is the biggest budgeted R-rated film of all time, I think. And just imagine, like, a film which, looking at the Wikipedia page now, which cost about $187 million, R-rated, and it had an ending like that. Like, you just, that's kind of unexpected and pretty ballsy of the studio at the time. And that's what I think really gives why I really like this film a lot. Like, yeah, it is flawed and, like, it is has its silly moments, but I mean, it still works as a hugely entertaining blockbuster.
Yeah, like I was gonna say, like we're describing like all of these like lighthearted kind of goofy things that happen, but like keep in mind, like this still continues the violent streak of the first two movies. Like there is bloodshed here, and like there's one like real like there is one scene like I totally forgot about where the TX is impersonating Kate's fiance who she has killed, and like the police or Drake are getting her over or getting him over, and all of a sudden like the robot arm bursts through this guy's chest and like starts like driving the car, and it's like, oh Jesus H, I forgot about that. That's gruesome. And like in this kind of like one of the last big like for this series at least, one of the last like moments that like really had bite, because like I said in T2 you had that like speared through the head and all this other stuff. So yeah, T3, it had some kind of campy bits in there, but yeah, it was just as violent and kind of graphic as the first two were.
I was going to say, like, one of my like major criticisms about this movie is how the character of Sarah Connor is pretty much, you know, swept away without any sort of ceremony. And look, she was killed by leukemia, and you know, leukemia sucks, all right. There's no denying that whatsoever. But here's the thing. In the first two movies, Sarah Connor's character was very deeply developed. Linda Hamilton put her all into the performance. And just to have her, you know, being killed off screen, and then, you know, oh, she left this gun cache here for you to find and whatnot. It's like, well, you know what? Why didn't, you know, Sarah leave something else? Like, why do they have to, you know, treat this character just so offhandedly? It's always something that's bothered me about it, because I love the character of Sarah, and just to have her be but a distant memory in this movie, like, or what seems like a distant memory in this movie, it never felt right to me. I don't know how the either of you two feel about it, but that's what I felt.
I didn't bother me, but I was reading just now. Well, Linda Hamilton was offered the comeback to the reprisal role in the third film, but she turned it down mainly. But I think she felt that her character arc was done in the first two, and basically her character just didn't feel that essential in the third film. And apparently her character was in the original drafts of the script. Her character was meant to die halfway through the film. But she wasn't interested in coming back to do the film, so that's probably why they sort of had a pretty much a die in between the second and third films. And I kind of find it kind of sad in a way, because like it like yeah, it's she dies of leukemia, but that's kind of like the thing. Out of all the things, like she's a woman who's been almost killed countless times by Terminators and all that, and it was just just human nature itself, it was the thing that ended up killing, which I think brought sort of like a sort of a sadness to the third film and all that. And interesting enough, when in between this film and the next one we're talking about, they also did a TV show, Terminator the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which had, funnily enough, Lena Headey from Game of Thrones in the role of Sarah Connor. And they actually, in the, I don't know if either of you two saw the show, but at some point during the show, a Terminator from the future, I mean, Sarah Connor asks a Terminator, like, what happens to her in the future? Does she get killed by him? And so one of them says, no, you die of leukemia. So that was something they sort of continued on from the third film. But I don't know how AJ feels about how Sarah Connor was treated in the third film.
Yeah, I definitely kind of have to agree with you guys. Like, Cyclops and X-Men 3 got a more respectful send-off than Sarah Connor did. Like B said, like, she was such an integral character for the first two movies, and even though she did pop up in a sense again in Salvation, which still like wasn't the best treatment of the character, but it was more than kind of what she got in Rise of the Machines, to just kind of dismiss her like, oh yeah, she died off screen, isn't that sad? Anyway, get back to the guns now. it does just seem kind of it does seem pretty on the weak side.
I mean, they could have easily have recasted the role. I mean, they have recasted John Connor so many times over the years, but I think they felt like, you know, Sarah Connor, like, Linda Hamilton is Sarah Connor, and it wouldn't have been the same if she wasn't there to, you know, play the role. But of course, you know, that'd be different much later on, but, you know, we can get into that soon. But we'll move on to the next film in the series. Of course, it is the 2009 film Terminator Salvation. This film was directed by McG, and was written by the same writers behind Terminator 3, and also had a lot of different people doing rewrites on the script, like Paul Haggis, Jonathan Nolan, Sean Ryan, and many others. And this one, though, takes a different approach, because unlike the first three films, this film actually does take place about 15 years after the events of Judgment Day, in which we follow, this time, Christian Bale plays the role of John Connor, but he's only one of two main characters we follow. Of course, is another main character is named Marcus Wright, played by Sam Worthington, who is a former prisoner on death row who wakes up in the future and discovers that Judgment Day has happened. And of course, during the course of the film, we discover a lot more about him, especially when he comes across young Kyle Reese, who in this version is played by Anton Yelchin. Now, B, tell us your thoughts on Terminator Salvation.
All right. To those of you out there who actually watch my reviews, congratulations for one thing. well, I actually gave more or less my general opinion about Salvation, but here is what I think of it in short. It's really not as terrible as so many people say it is. But it is so full of troubles that they really do permeate through the film. Like, you can say, you know, it's nitpicking, but here's the thing. The main scheme of Skynet in this movie is what drives the plot. And in short, that the scheme makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. It really doesn't. And what's unfortunate is that this film looks, sounds, and just it has some really impressive stuff going for it. I really do applaud it for, you know, setting it in, you know, after Judgment Day and the apocalypse has happened and humans are rising from the ashes again to take on the machines. I really, really like that. I was happy that they finally decided just to move it forward and move it to John Connor's story. But this wasn't really John Connor's story, was it? It was the story of Marcus Wright. And truth be told, I have nothing against Sam Worthington, but this character to me, as he's written, seems very inconsequential. And the fact that he is the main character of this movie just does not make sense. If If I had written Terminator Salvation, I would have made an active point to have made John Connor the central character. He and Kate both. He and Kate Connor. Because, you know, at this point, John isn't quite the legend that he would become. But he's working his way up and he's getting a reputation and he's got a lot of people fighting for him and respecting him and everything like that. So wouldn't it have made more sense, like, theoretically, like you had Sarah Connor's story and now you have John Connor's story. Wouldn't it have been more logical if they made this film more about John Connor's perspective on the war, what he's dealing with, his losses, his tragedies, his victories? Because everything outside of that, it just seems out of place. And like I said, it's really not bad of a movie, but that doesn't mean to say that there isn't some serious boneheadedness going on in this movie, because there is so much going on. It's, at most, it is a very sort of polarizing movie for me. No, it doesn't offend me as so many people feel it offends them, but it really isn't the Terminator 4 that I was waiting for. But that's just me here.
AJ, tell us your thoughts on Terminator Salvation.
Well, Terminator Salvation, when I first saw it in the theater, I kind of wrestled with myself over this one because I thought it was a pretty decent movie. Like, the visual effects and the special effects were really good, and I did like the newer direction in the story. Like, there were no time travel elements, which in a way they kind of do. They just kind of like fudge it up a little bit with like, oh, he's Sam Worthington's character is kind of like unstuck in time. It's like he's however many years later into the future and he has an age. What's going on there? So they kind of do something like that, but not explicit like being sent back to kill / protect someone. And so I did like that new direction they took, and that it was a movie that was set like during the war on Skynet. And at the time I was kind of like, okay, this is really cool, but it still didn't, you know, feel like a Terminator movie to me, which kind of made me skew my rating towards like the mix to positive instead of just positive. I just watched it I probably finished this up about a couple hours ago for the first time I've seen it since the theater. And I still don't think it's all that bad. You know, just the 5-year-old in me was like, giant robots, like motorcycle robots, yay, more robots, like just a variety of creations and stuff in this one. But yeah, as B said, I still don't hate the movie. Like, I really don't despise this movie at all or see it as the embarrassment that a lot of people do. But yeah, like, in terms of story, it is just kind of split down the middle by focusing on two people when it should have just been one. Because you do have John Connor struggle to be like he knows what his destiny is, but he's kind of being undermined by all these other leaders who are like, no, we know what's going on. So, and his story just basically kind of gets resolved by just other people dying, and he just kind of falls into it. Like, there's no, like, sense of accomplishment. It's like, oh, Michael Ironside got blew up. You're the leader now. Like, oh, okay, I win. Which is just kind of, like, a little bit on the weak side. And then you have Sam Worthington's character, who you don't necessarily hate the guy, but you don't feel terribly much for him. Like, there's no, like, barely a redemptive journey. Because, like, you start off the movie with him, like, when he's human. Because, you know, surprise, you know, he's like part Terminator. He's like a Terminator prototype, but you see him in like the before Judgment Day happens, and he's like on death row and he's brooding and he committed these crimes, but you know he's a good guy, and you know he has to like, you know, conquer his machine side in order to redeem himself in the eyes of the Resistance, who only see him as a machine. But you just don't feel like a whole lot of stuff to him. Like, his journey is just kind of like, oh, okay, he feels better now about himself. So yeah, in terms of the story, it definitely could have just had a lot more. It would have been more improved if it just had more focus. But, you know, visually it was pretty interesting. Like, the action sequences were a lot of fun. There was a good mix of practical effects and CG that still holds up pretty decently, especially like the T-600s, which are like the clunkier, kind of more brutish, like precursors to the T-800s, which are just like these big tanks of human being or humanoid shapes. And you can tell that that's like either like puppetry or like suit, and like it just looks cool. So yeah, Terminator Salvation is I like it less than Rise of the Machines. It is an imperfect film, but by no means do I hate it, and by no means does it sully the Terminator saga for me.
Cool. I'm pretty much both on the same boat as you. I probably liked it a little bit more, but one of the reasons why I liked it is I liked everything around the movie, but I do think the script is what sort of is the most flawed part of the film. And I think it really is because, like I sort of mentioned earlier when we I talked at the start of this, you know, section of the review, is that there were so many different writers were brought on to sort of reshape the script, and I think having so many different writers sort of bringing their own stamp to it, the movie kind of loses focus because of that. Because if you read, like I've read a lot of articles over the years of the making of this film, and the sort of what they originally came up with the story for this film is completely different than the finished product that we ended up getting. Like it just was, it's so different. And of course, like for one part was that John Connor was not going to be in it at all until the very last scene of the film, and that it was going to mostly be a Marcus Wright's point of view as this kind of character who from the present. And like you say, AJ, kind of role reversal as a dude who wakes up in the future rather than, you know, going into the past, who kind of is experiencing Judgment Day for the first time. And of course, there were different alternate endings. There was like one in which John Connor dies, and then and Marcus Wright takes over the role as John Connor. Like they remove his skin from his face and put John Connor's face over his. And another one is similar to the ending that we got in which Marcus Wright saves John Connor's life by giving him his heart. But at the very end, something happens to Marcus Wright. He goes, snaps into Terminator mode, and he kills everybody. And pretty much ends on sort of a fuck you note.
I like the face off 2.0 ending.
But as sort of saying this, you can see that they were trying to. There were so many different ideas and concepts and stories they wanted to go with, but I think they were trying to sort of balance them all into this one script. But I don't think it quite gets there. But that being said, though, I think everything else around the script is pretty solid. I actually do think. McG does a pretty solid job with his direction of the film. I like the visual look of the film. The action sequences are pretty well done. And I also love the sort of the world building of the film as well. And I think everybody in the cast is pretty solid. It's like some of them aren't really given much to do, but there are some solid performances, like Anton Yelchin, who does a really great job at sort of mimicking Michael Biehn's performance from the first Terminator.
Yeah, absolutely. Kudos to Anton for this. Like, he did a really good job. He was one of my favorite performers in this movie. He did a great job of he didn't just do like a good Michael Biehn impression. He emulated like that weariness about Kyle Reese. And I thought he did a really, really good job.
I agree. And also there's some pretty cool set pieces. Like you can tell McG was definitely inspired by Children of Men while watching this film. Cause there's a couple of scenes in this film where these long continuous sort of action set pieces that are all done in one take. Well, at least seemingly look like they were done in one take, particularly the one with where John Connor comes out of that sort of Terminator base and he gets in the helicopter and he gets shot down. It kind of looks like it's all done in one take. And of course, you know, it has a pretty interesting mixture of cast members. I mean, Helena Bonham Carter's in this film for like 5 minutes as Skynet. And I also do think Sam Worthington is pretty good as Marcus Wright. I know you guys didn't think much of his character or plot, but I actually thought he was the only one in the film that sort of had that sort of emotional center and also was the only one who sort of had a character arc in the film. And I thought he did a pretty good job here. And I do think his sort of romance with Moon Bloodgood's character was kind of forced and it just wasn't really needed and it didn't make any sense whatsoever. But overall, I think it's a, like, it is a pretty flawed film, but I do admire that its ambition and that the fact that it wanted to be different from the other films. And it's a shame that I would have loved to have seen more Terminator films set in the future, But, you know, unfortunately, this wasn't meant to be, unfortunately. But, which takes us to our next film, which will be our in-depth review of Terminator Genesis. Now, this one is directed by Alan Taylor, who prior to this is best known for directing TV shows like Game of Thrones, The Sopranos, Mad Men, but previously he directed the blockbuster For the Dark World. And the plot for this one is it pretty much goes back to sort of the timeline of the first film where Kyle Reese is sent by John Connor to go back to 1984 to save and protect Sarah Connor. But when he gets back there, he realizes that something has changed, and from there, pretty much a new entire timeline is created. And he meets Sarah. In this one, Sarah Connor is already the warrior woman that she is, and that there was already a Terminator. Of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger is back, of course, to play the Terminator. And of course, they've been working together as a duo for like about over 10 years. And then, of course, and Skynet has different plans for wanting to destroy the world in this one. So, B, tell us your thoughts on Terminator Genesis.
It really isn't that bad, guys. I just want to say that right now. I think you two will distinctly remember when the film first came out, according to early reviews, you know, it's terrible, it's the pox upon humanity, it's the worst thing to happen to the Terminator franchise, and blah, blah, blah. Well, shit. The way, the how, you know, given how notorious they made the damn thing sound, it's like, oh, man, I have to see this now. But in all actuality, it's not bad, guys. It really, really isn't. Like, once again, it's not the caliber that, you know, the first two films were, but if that is what you're expecting by this point, I'm sorry, you've really missed the brief here. So as a preface to that, here is what I really do like about Terminator Genesis. I feel that it is a comic book movie wearing the skin of a Terminator,
I can agree with that,
first and
yeah.
foremost, because the first two films are definitely entrenched in science fiction and, you know, action, you know, something very firm like that. Comic book movies these days are like a dime a dozen. There are so many going on, and they've pretty much become a mainstream event. And I like that. And when these people are saying that this film is too ridiculous and too stupid, well, you have to remember, you are dealing with, you know, cyborg assassins traveling back and forth through time, and cybernetic revolts, and, you know, rising against the machines, and time displacement and everything like that. So to me, to call a film like this a comic book movie is actually giving it a compliment. It's got a distinctive sense of fun about it. And no, not all the actors are, you know, that sort of up to the challenge, but I never felt any of them were terrible. By way of instance, Emilia Clarke as Sarah Connor, you know, I didn't necessarily doubt her being Sarah, but I figured at the very least it would be interesting. And I gotta say, I actually didn't mind her. Like, she, but given by this point the timeline has changed dramatically, therefore that the character has changed. Like, she's lived a completely different life at this point. So of course she's gonna be different. Of course she's gonna have very little tolerance for bullshit and that sort of stuff. So I feel that the way Clark performs her, that the way that Clark portrays Sarah, it's, I like it. I think that there's something quite enduring about it. I also want to say that Jai Courtney and Jason Clark, two Australians, by the way, being in this movie is kind of cool too. For one thing, Courtney doesn't try to ape Michael Biehn. Like, you know, you can say what you like about Courtney's acting talent, and you know what, I'm not going to really argue with you against that, but I didn't feel he was terrible. He had a sense of, you know, groundedness and likability about him. And Jason Clarke, who plays John Connor, he was a surprise. Like, Jason Clarke has been around for quite some time, as I'm sure you guys would know,
Oh, yeah.
but he's never really been a household name. So it's right now that, you know, he's coming sort of forward into the limelight, and maybe, just maybe, he's actually going to make the big sort of breaking role. But in saying that, this film, if nothing else, really does suffer from very lazy writing. The way it sort of relies on, it has so many opportunities, like, right there for it to take in terms of time travel and, you know, characters adjusting to the way, you know, times have changed. Because this Sarah Connor is used to a 1984 world. So when she gets, you know, zapped forward into 2017, like, you get hints of her sort of being confused about what's happening, but you don't really see that this time displacement has dramatically affected her. So I just wish they could have played more with this notion and that the consequences that are visited, you know, on the characters in this movie. I just wish there could have been more of them. But that's still, like, that's not to say that this movie is bad. Absolutely not. So I really don't get the vitriolic hatred that it's getting right now. It's really no worse than, say, you know, Terminator Salvation was. And you know what? I would say that Terminator Genisys is actually a more or less decent addition to the franchise. It's not brilliant. It's not great. But it could have been much, much worse here.
Cool. AJ, tell us your...
Hey.
Sorry. Sorry about that. I am being completely and utterly terrible today. So forgive me. AJ, tell us your thoughts on Terminator Genisys.
Oh boy. The best way I can describe watching Terminator Genisys, it's like they gave $150 million to make a commercial for the Terminator toys. And because it feels like a commercial in the sense that everything feels very safe, like the violence is downplayed a lot and the characters just don't feel like they're who they're supposed to be. It's like they couldn't get Christian Bale or something for the commercial, so it's like they hired someone who kind of looks like him, and it's like, and you're just kind of sitting there like, wait, that's not John Connor, who's that? And they have these, it looks like a very plastic movie, and that's the thing. Like, there is, like, the movie is not, like, as B said, the pox upon humanity. Like, this isn't the end of cinema, but this was a very, very plastic movie. It was very sleek. It was very clean. It did not have any of the bite that the previous four movies had. Like, you start off with, like, the initial Skynet assault, and it's, a lot of it's done with, like, laser guns and, like, pew, 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 pew. And, like, it looks like a glorified late laser tag game going on that just really, really got out of hand. And it just... And it just didn't really feel like there was a whole lot of, like, weight behind any of the soldiers. Nothing, like, even minor characters, like, going back to Terminator 2 when the foster dad died. It was like, oh my god, he's dead, whoa. Or, and, like, the cop who got the arm through the chest in number 3. It's like, whoa, oh my god, this guy died. And here it's just scores of, like, enemies in a video game falling down. And you have Jay Courtney, who's just a total blank slate as Kyle Reese, and I didn't, you know, definitely didn't expect him to do, like, a Michael Biehn impression, just knowing his casting, but he just seemed too much of, like, a jock kind of lunkhead who just kind of spent the entire movie being dragged around going, which was kind of the point, because, you know, the whole aim of the movie is that everything's flipped around and he's not necessarily in the hero role anymore, and which kind of creates some friction when Pops, the Terminator nickname for Schwarzenegger, who's been hanging around since the 70s, is trying to force those two to, as he says, have you mated yet? And it's just like, and there's kind of some friction there, and they don't really go into that either terribly deeply, where Sarah says, like, well, maybe I don't want to be with this person. Like, I have a choice, and I want to do such and such. And obviously, you know, there's going to be a happy ending. Not going to spoil the exact details, but you'd pretty much figure out what's going to happen. But it doesn't feel like there was a whole lot of consequence to it. It was just kind of like, oh, yeah, they're going to get together or whatever. And just from, like, the time travel aspect of it, like, this movie has some of, like, the worst, like, sequel baiting that I've seen in a movie since, like, Jumper and The Golden Compass, where it's like, we're just gonna leave all of these details out, just set up the stuff and not have any answers whatsoever. It's like, who sent the Arnold Terminator to protect Sarah Connor. I don't know. You got to see the next movie. Why is there an Asian T-1000 running around the 80s? I don't know. You got to see the next movie. And it's like,
well,
it just,
to be fair, it's not as, I could agree to an extent, but at least it's not as annoyingly obnoxious as The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which pretty much every figure of that movie was going to be set up in the next film, which unfortunately was never going to happen.
Oh, well.
I'm with you there. It wasn't to that level, but still, it just became like such a nuisance where it's just, the things I can say in this movie's favor that Jason Clark was intimidating. Like, I don't want to say too much, but even though the ads have just spoiled the ever loving shit out of this movie, like,
I have no idea why they did that. That was just ridiculous.
I know, like, every trailer and every TV spot like gave away the big stuff, and I'm like, the optimist in me, like, I'm gonna kill the optimist in me for thinking like, oh, they're gonna have a bigger answer, like there's gonna be like something really interesting tie these all together. They're just showing the things that happen in the movie. Enjoy, kids. And it just became like such a nuisance. But anyway, like, Jason Clark did a pretty decent job. Like,
You can tell he's having fun playing the villain.
Yeah. Like, Emilia Clarke, like, she seems like a great actress. I've only seen like a few episodes of Game of Thrones, so I have only seen her just like a little bit of her on there. She seems pretty good, even though she seems like very awfully young to do, trying to be like Bede said, the warrior woman that Sarah Connor's become. She just seems like she's a 12-year-old just trying to like I'm a tough girl, you guys, let's go. Like no, you are not Linda Hamilton. Like, not even like in the 1984 Linda Hamilton. Like, you're just not even there yet. J.K. Simmons I thought was a lot of fun, and kind of a useless part is this cop who interacts with the team when they go to like 1984, and then years down the road he's like this kind of conspiracy theorist alcoholic cop who's like, see, it's time traveling robots, I told you. But he doesn't have a whole lot to do, but he's a lot of fun. And again, Arnold slips into the role like an old sweater, like he's having a good time. But like, this movie just, it didn't offend me, it didn't upset me, it just tired me, because it just could have been so much better. They could have executed what they wanted to do so much more efficiently, instead of just complicating everything for itself and then just throwing its hands in the air and throwing its fate in the hands of a sequel that may or may not come, which, you know, have we learned nothing from the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes? Like, be sure you are able to deliver what you want to deliver. And if the box office returns for this movie are any indication, I don't think we're going to get T6 anytime soon.
Well, they said the same thing about Terminator Salvation, because that was a huge hit when that came out, and we still ended up getting a new Terminator film anyway. So, for my thoughts on the film, like, I think I'm more in line with B. I think for what it is, I think it is a fun film. I did really enjoy it a lot. And, like, as it is, like, it's definitely a very flawed. And again, I'd have to say it's mostly the script. Because I think the time travel mechanics of this film is overly too complicated. Like, because it doesn't really make sense when you sort of sit back and sort of think about it. And it's like, because from what I read, apparently, like, we're dealing, like, in this film, we're going to, I should have stated earlier without, we'll do spoilers for this film. Matt Smith, the Doctor from the Doctor Who, he, in the film, everyone sort of wondered who is his character in the film. And, he apparently is sort of like the, I guess, human form of Skynet. From what I've read, something about it, the writers wanted to do something involving multiverses, and that Skynet has somehow been able to go in different timelines and all that. I don't think that came across in the film at all. But
no,
it didn't. Yeah, it's sort of like, but again, like AJ said, these are probably things that they're probably going to be doing for a sequel if it ends up happening. And
because for like the timeline wise, if you want to say, okay, we'll ignore Salvation, we'll ignore Rise of the Machines, fine. But then you also have like the movie, like, you have like the Arnold Terminator, you know, protecting Sarah Connor in the 70s and 80s, and then you move on to you have a Cyberdyne, you know, rebuilding Skynet and launching it as like a social media like program, like an operating system that a billion people have pre-ordered, which okay, what? And you have Miles Dyson there and his son. It's like, okay, but wait a minute, Miles died in T2. Did T2 happen? And it's
no,
like,
I think people seem to forget that this new timeline kind of wiped out T2, because you got to remember in the first film,
yeah,
Skynet only got sort of the elements to create Skynet is because they had the Terminator's hand and CPU chip. So since those were destroyed in this film, they didn't have the technology to create Skynet. Hence why Jason Clark was sent back in time by Skynet to ensure its creation.
that makes more sense, but still they could have done like a better job of like calling attention to it and just kind of instead of presenting it like, okay, this is this now, and you're like, okay, hold on, what? And just thinking about this movie hurts, guys.
I don't know if it hurts me that much, but yeah, at the same time, like, I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm just gonna, this doesn't make any sense, but I'm just gonna enjoy the ride anyway. But I think the acting for most part was pretty solid. I think Arnold, yes, he's probably gives the best performance in the whole film. Like, it is an all, this role is pretty much an old glove for him, and it still fits him perfectly. And I thought both Emilia Clarke and Jai Courtney were so, like, Jai Courtney in particular, he doesn't try to, it's definitely a different take on Michael Biehn's character, but I thought for most part, I thought he was pretty solid, and I found him quite likable in the film. And and also Jason Clarke, like I said earlier, you could tell he's just having a lot of fun playing sort of the villain role. And I do agree, why on earth did they have the trailers and all that have to show the twist? It was annoying. But apparently they've been doing that for pretty much nearly every sort of entry in the series, because they did it for Terminator 2. They did that for Terminator Salvation as well, when you found out that Marcus Wright was a Terminator. I'm like, why are you people giving these plot twists away? What is wrong with
you? Do you really think we're stupid?
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird, but for the most part, I thought it was a solid, fun film. Like, it's not a great film, and but I think it, as B says, it's more sort of like the comic book movie version of the Terminator. And I think in that regard, I think for most part, it that succeeds in that regard. But at the same time, it does have a lot of problems.
But the fact is, as AJ said, it plays it way too safe to truly sort of make its mark. I mean, if you're just wanting to, kick back and, not try to rationalize too much about it, like, you probably get far more satisfaction than if you sat down fully expecting to make something completely comprehensive about the movie. It just doesn't work like that. And it is a shame that it limited itself in so many regards, like, setting it up for a sequel and saying, well, if you want to find out more, you have to make the sequel, blah, blah, blah. Well, that they shouldn't assume these things. Try and pick a couple of answers, the more pressing answers, or at least, putting hints into the movie just to sort of further inform the audience about what's going on, about who's doing what and why and everything like that. And another thing that I just wish they could have done more of was try to give Jason Clarke more to do. Like, he did fine with what he was given, but he wasn't the pressing menace that he really should have been, And it's just a shame that the film, for all its good intentions, was still sort of, keeping its life jacket on rather than, taking it off and, swimming into the ocean and just seeing what would happen. But nonetheless, it really isn't that awful.
Yeah, just keeping, the time travel and how everything ties together, just removing that out of the picture, just the action sequences here were just really, really dull. It's like, we got a car chase, we got a helicopter chase, we got kind of a brawl in the police station, a shootout, just nothing really stood out. Everything was just, very traditional and very, oh, okay, that was, killed, 5 minutes. And in addition to, John Connor not being a terribly menacing presence, even though I thought Clark did the best job he could, there was no, real sense of, because as we find out, Matt Smith is Skynet, infected John Connor with like basically these nano robots that rewrote his entire genetic code. So like it destroyed his humanity. Like there is no John Connor left. You just this machine that like knows his memories and can manipulate, but there's no real sense of like for Sarah, it's like this Sarah hasn't really grown up with her son. So there's no sense of like, oh, my son's become this thing now, but you have Jay Courtney as Kyle Reese, like this is this guy who's mentored me, who's been the leader of the resistance and has been my, you know, friend and all this stuff. But there really wasn't any way like, oh no, this guy that I've known for many years and basically raised me is the enemy now. There's no anguish there. It's just, oh, I gotta kill you now. No, you're not a person. Like it just glazed over really, really fast.
I'm very disappointed that the writer of Dracula 2000 couldn't write more emotional stuff in this movie. I'm just saying.
I know, right? I know. What kind of world?
Yes. Although I did enjoy that movie as well. But anyways.
That's why you're terrible.
Yes. I think that could be a wrap on our... actually, one more thing I'll talk about. I got to give credit for director Alan Taylor. For most part, the scenes in 1984, I got to give him credit for doing most of that entire section, pretty much doing it in a shot-for-shot kind of remake of the first half of the first film. Because if you actually watch the first film and this one, particularly with those scenes back-to-back, he actually shot them exactly the same, framed them the same, and it's pretty much like a remake of that regard. I mean, I got to give him credit for that, because that's actually, I thought it was pretty cool, like, doing it, like, he could have done it in his own different way, but he thought, you know what, I'm just going to do it, honor the original, and just do homage all these, you know, all the shots from, you know, the first film in this section of the film. But, you know, that's just me, though. But
well, to be perfectly fair, Gus Van Sant did the same thing with the Psycho remake.
Yeah, but that was the entire movie. This is like for like 20 minutes.
True.
But
for the most part, I did like his recreation of those scenes and moments from the first Terminator until you got to like the bargain brand Bill Paxton they got to fill the
room.
I'm like, you are not Bill Paxton. Yeah, sit down.
I've read somewhere they actually tried to get Bill Paxton to reprise that role for this film.
The punk just didn't learn his lesson.
Hey, in this new timeline, I want to know what the punk guy's been up to now since he's survived.
A nice Catholic guy living at home with a wife and child.
He's like, boy, that robot sure sent me on the straight and narrow.
Funny. Okay, that might be a wrap on our talk on Terminator Genesis. Will there be another one? I'm not sure. Like, the box office hasn't been that big in the US. It has done better worldwide, but I guess, you know, I mean, the fact that, you know, it is possible that we'll probably see some at some point, but who knows. But I was reading the other day, apparently, that regardless on how well the films do, apparently the rights to Terminator will be going back to James Cameron in 2019. So if they do want to make more, they're going to have to do it within the next few years. But we shall see.
Once he gets them, he'll promise Terminator 6 for 10 years.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be it's gonna be a crossover with Avatar. I'm just putting it out there right now.
Oh damn it! I wanted to be a crossover with Aliens.
They could be like, he could do his own universe. You know, he could have a crossover with Aliens, Titanic, Terminator, and the Abyss, and Avatar.
True Lies.
And True Lies.
All I can say is that I'm incredibly aroused by this prospect.
We should write a script for it right now.
Just have Christian Bale come in, run into Sully, and go like, I've seen you before.
I have like Jake Sully just run into Marcus Ryder, like, you look familiar. Oh, is that what happened to my
body? You?
Is that what happened to my body after I discarded it? You took a Terminator took over. See, all these ideas are coming up now. We need to write this script right now.
And somehow Sully from Monsters Incorporated comes in.
Of course. I don't know what that has to do with James Cameron, but we can find a way to work that in. But yep, I think that'll be a wrap on our talk of Terminator. Now, I think we still have a bit of time left, so we might do a quick round of things that we've been watching lately. We'll probably just talk about one thing, a film or TV show in particular we've been watching, before we wrap up the show. B, what movie or TV show have you been watching lately you would like to discuss?
With television, I've been watching Hannibal. In case you haven't checked it out, please do. It is fantastic. One of the best shows on television right now. In terms of movies, I've checked out recently Starry Eyes and The Taking of Deborah Logan. Have either of you seen those?
I know of both of them, but I haven't seen them yet.
I've heard of them, haven't seen them.
Well, I say like they're definitely recommendable. Like, if you can check these films out, they're not mainstream, which I feel gives them a certain charm to it. And quite frankly, one of the final scenes in The Taking of Deborah Logan is just, are you a fan of Francisco Goya? Let's just put it that way.
I don't. I have no idea who that is.
Painful.
I feel bad. So.
Well, okay. Well, let's just leave it at gore and just leave it at that. But just they're actually pretty decent films. They're not fantastic, but it really does depend on how much you are willing to just go with it. But yeah, that's what I've been up to. How about you two? What have you been up to?
AJ, what have you been watching lately you would like to talk about?
Well, in the latest bad decision in 30 years of bad decision making, I've been watching Mortal Kombat Conquest, a terrible show from the late 90s. I believe it was on like TNT or some show here or some channel here, featuring it's like a prequel series in the Mortal Kombat universe, featuring Kung Lao's lead character and then two other people who you don't care about. Funny enough, one of them is played by Kristanna Loken, who I believe was like 19 or 18 when she did this show. It was like very early on in her career. Yeah, the production value, the writing, the performances for the most part, they have the guy playing Raiden here, who is no Christopher Lambert, but he's still like he gives a good wise ass performance as Raiden here. When he's like summoned for advice, he's like, "Oh, well, you got to handle it yourself. Bye." I was like, "God, Raiden, you jerk." But yeah, like it is completely ridiculous. And fortunately, I only ended up paying like $10 for the complete series, and I've seen it on the store shelves for 30. So yeah, like if anything, like I'm gonna finish this up. It's a long haul. Like I've only seen like three episodes, and it's like I think 40 something total. It's like this is gonna be a long one. So that's what I've seen in terms of TV shows. In terms of movies, I saw one Abid, the other day. I believe you reviewed the newer version of Far from the Madding Crowd, correct?
Yes.
Right. I saw the original 60s version
Ooh.
with Julie Christie, Peter Finch, Terrence Stamp. And in some respects, I kind of admire it because it is sort of like a halfway point for Hollywood filmmaking. Like it is a big costume movie. It's epic. It's a long movie. It has like a overture, intermission, and everything. And it's got all these costumes, but it kind of has this very like naturalistic kind of downbeat feel. It's like how like kind of like scuzzy rural living back in its time period was, but just in terms of like a story of like caring about these characters, knowing where they come from and the suspense of like whether or not they'll end up with each other. And like, I just couldn't have cared less. And it was such a long slog. And I don't know how the novel compares or how the Carey Mulligan movie compares, but yeah, it was a beautiful looking movie and there was a lot of great actors in it, but it was just like a romantic a mess. Like you just really didn't care about any of these people ending up with each other or just empathizing with them to any degree. They just did dramatic things and you were supposed to be involved. And yeah, it was big disappointment, but I am still interested in checking out the new one.
Cool. For me personally, on the film front, one film I've watched recently that I really loved, and it might be one of my favorites of the year so far, is Love and Mercy, which is the biopic on the life of Beach Boys lead singer Brian Wilson. And it sort of tells two different parallel stories, one set in the 60s where where he's played by Paul Dano, and he sort of during the creation of the sort of Pet Sounds album. That's where he sort of starts to come to his mental illness. While in the 80s, we sort of see him played by John Cusack, who is, you know, sort of who's striking up a relationship with a woman played by Elizabeth Banks, but at the same time, he appears under the thumb of this tyrannical doctor that's watching over him, played by Paul Giamatti. It's a great, great, great film. I absolutely loved it. Definitely one of the stronger biopics because, it has two parallel stories. And at the same time, it's the performances that also give it that sort of something special. Both John Cusack and Paul Dano are both amazing in this film. And so are Elizabeth Banks and Paul Giamatti. So if you haven't seen this, and it was actually co-written by the writer-director of The Messengers, I think, you know, the one with Woody Harrelson and Ben Foster, and as well, he also co-wrote I'm Not There as well. So I definitely recommend Love and Mercy. If you haven't seen it, check it out. And on the TV front, I recently, and I'm going to be reviewing this for supermarcy.com, so I expect a review for this over the next few weeks. I finished the first collection of the Japanese anime series Attack on Titan, which is, for those out there who don't know, it's sort of a post-apocalyptic story set where about 100 years ago, these sort of giant humanoid giants called Titans sort of mysteriously came to the Earth and started killing and devouring people in their path. And then during that time, everyone on the planet tried to sort of head north, and they created these giant walls to keep them out. And now 100 years later, everyone's sort of living in peace and prosperity. But then one day, a colossal giant, sort of this humongous one that's sort of 10 times bigger than all the other ones that we have seen, destroys the wall, and then the Titans sort of swarm in and start killing everyone in their path. And of course, sort of, we follow this one character, Eren Kruger, whose mother is eaten by a Titan, and he sort of decides to join this sort of army corps, these Rangers, to sort of, as he gets older, to sort of fight back and kill the Titans. And I have to say, I thought it was a pretty cool series. It sort of has a mixture of, if I describe the series, it's kind of like a mixture of Game of Thrones meets Pacific Rim meets Starship Troopers. But it sort of has this sort of medieval kind of feel to it, but having, at the same time, sort of modern influences to it. And it's actually a pretty damn good show. Pretty intense, great animation, pretty violent as well, and it's pretty compelling. And of course, I had to watch the series because there are two live action movies coming out very soon, so I wanted to check this out in preparation for that. So if you haven't seen Attack on Titan, well, I watched the first 13 episodes. I haven't seen the second half of the first season yet, but so far I'm pretty much a fan of the show so far, and if you haven't seen it, definitely it's worth checking out.
Haven't seen the first season of Attack on Titan. Yeah, it's best described as a post-apocalyptic steampunk medieval version of Night of the Living Dead, except it's giants with creepy faces and lack of genitalia instead of zombies.
Exactly. That's probably sums it up better than I did. but B, you'll definitely have to check it out if you haven't seen it, because I think it might be right up your alley.
Oh, it really does sound like it. Like I said, you sold me.
Sweet. But yeah, look out for my review for that very soon. Also, yep, I think that should be a wrap for our show today. I hope all of our listeners enjoyed it. And I want to thank both B and AJ for coming on the show today and for co-hosting duties, and as well as talking all things Terminator.
Oh, well, thank you for having us. And also, I just want to say this right now. Bede, you've done a wonderful job hosting the Super Podcast. So well done.
Oh, thank you, Bede.
Well and truly.
Thank you very much.
I still hate you.
if Marcy's listening to this right now, she'd be thinking, oh, how dare Bede. No,
You're terrible in all things except podcast hosting.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. But hopefully our co-hosts, Marcy and Nick, will be back very soon. And I know Marcy wants to get back on the show very soon, but of course, due to health reasons, she hasn't been able to. But hopefully in the next couple of shows, she will. But before we finish up today, B, where can people find you on the internet this week?
All right. So you can find me on Twitter, under Daboomcat. That's @DA_BoomCat, and that's cat with a K, not with a C, you know, like Mortal Kombat. You can also find me, of course, at supermarcy.com, adventureamigos.net, Wolf in a Gorilla Suit, run by our mutual friend, Diego, and finally, morehorror.com. And AJ, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter as well, @TheMadMovieMan. I write for a ton of different websites, so I'm not going to go through the laundry list right now. But suffice to say, that's where you want to go, because I'm always posting the latest links to the reviews I've written. Over the weekend, I reviewed, or in the past week or so, I reviewed The Maltese Bippy, comedy from the 60s starring Rowan and Martin, which was very, very terrible. Then I also, over the weekend, reviewed The Flying Deuces, Laurel and Hardy comedy from the 30s. So I review basically anything that just kind of tickles my fancy. And that's where you can get me. Twitter, @TheMadMovieMan.
Awesome. You can find our podcast page at facebook.com/sm.com/superpodcast, and as well as our website www.supermarcy.com, and as well as you can download our episodes at the website as well, but you can also download the show at our iTunes page at Super Marcy Super Podcast. You can download, subscribe to the episodes there, and also, and I'm going to do this for Marcy, you can also, if you want to, Marcy has her own Etsy store, which has some really cool items and scarves and other cool stuff. If you're interested in buying them, you can check. And I know Bea is a huge fan of them.
I am, and I wear her wares very often, and they're very, very comfortable and incredibly stylish.
Yep. And if you're interested in checking them out, you can check them out at Marcy's store at www.etsy, that's etsy.com/au/shop/littlelilysstore, so you can check those out. And for me personally, you can find me just going around to people in my best Arnold voice going, I need your shoes, I need your claws, and stuff like that on a regular basis.
Have you ever been arrested for doing that?
Surprisingly, not yet. but there's always time. But seriously, though, you can find me... Sorry.
I was going to say, you don't have to be nude while you're doing it.
Oh, well, there would be no point in doing it if I did do that, but, that's a whole different story.
But no fate.
Yeah, no fate than what we make. You can find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/BeJamine, or my Facebook page at facebook.com/BeJamine, or my fan page at facebook.com/TerribleAussie. And, of course, you can find my weekly writings at supermarcy.com with video reviews, audio reviews, written reviews, articles, and a bunch of awesome cool stuff. So, yep, that's the end of our episode of Super Podcast. I hope our listeners enjoyed it. And, again, thanks, AJ and B, for coming on. And we'll see you guys all later. See everyone. Bye.
Bye.
See you, gang.